and analysis on demand. This is PID Radio.
Catapult of propaganda.
Alien race to come down and threaten us.
The military-industrial complex.
A highly funded yet unofficial government agency. Take the red pill.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier.
Live, local, and listening to you. The Drive with Garrett Gilbert on the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle939.com.
Off-road Friday, actually on the road Friday today, as we're live at the Hy-Vee on West Broadway in Columbia. It's Food for Families Friday. We're here to ask you to help support the Central Missouri Food Bank and the work that they do for up to 80,000 people in Missouri every single month. 33 counties across Missouri depend on the Central Missouri Food Bank to keep them from going hungry. And your dollar, a $1 donation, translates into 20 meals through the Central Missouri Food Bank. So when you come out to the Hy-Vee today, look for the guy sitting at the left entrance outside. You can't miss it. We got the big signs out here. You're doing the whole, you know, self-promotion thing. And then you step right inside, and you can make a donation of a non-perishable food item or your cash donation for the Central Missouri Food Bank. It's for a great cause, and it helps our neighbors right here in mid-Missouri. Now, joining us on phone today is an author that we've had on the drive several times over the last several months. She's the one responsible for making us aware of the National Bio and Agro Defense Facility, the proposed bioweapons laboratory for Homeland Security that could wind up here in Columbia. And it seemed like an appropriate time to bring Kate Iola back to the Eagle 93.9, sort of make a food theme for the show today. Kate, welcome back to the Eagle 93.9.
Hi, Derek. Thanks for inviting me.
This is an interesting time right now. Columbia has made it into the final, 17 now, in the running for NBAF?
Yes, something right around 17.
Okay. And while we've got that going on, that process, by the way, we just cleared another hurdle. We had a visit from representatives of the Department of Homeland Security here just last week. We also are dealing with issues regarding to food safety, although my opinion, and see if you agree, is that we're not hearing enough about the safety of our food supply in the major media. Yes, there was a bit of a hue and cry when the dogs and cats got sick from the melamine-tainted pet food. But then word came out that the FDA only inspects about 1.5% of the food and food additives that we import from places like China and India and other third-world nations. How safe is our food supply, really?
Well, there are several ways to tackle that question, Derek. One is to think about the supplies that are put into the food, like you were mentioning, that such a small percentage actually gets inspected. So this is a percentage that applies to pretty much everything that's imported into the country, whether it's food that's going to be going into our bodies or other kinds of goods. There's a tremendous volume of goods that come into the country, and the inspection burden is tremendously more than our inspectors can handle.
And yet, how often when the FDA does get out and inspect a load of incoming food, do you know how often they run across stuff that really isn't fit for human consumption?
I don't know specific numbers on that. I would just say, though, I would much rather be taking my chances with food in this country than in other countries, Derek.
Well, I would have to agree with you there. Well, let's concentrate on the security of our food supply as regards the food that is grown here. You were invited to speak by the FBI at a symposium last fall in Kansas City that dealt with agro-terror. How serious a problem is that in the United States? How serious is Homeland Security taking this?
They are taking the subject of agroterrorism very seriously. The terminology they use is that agriculture is a major soft target. It's something which, well, if you talk about the difficulty of inspecting imported food, how about the difficulty of safeguarding wide open fields of grain and livestock? It's basically impossible to protect all of these goods that are being produced in the countryside.
Kate Iola is a guest on the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle939.com, and her novel, Deadstock, deals exactly with this topic. I have made some progress in getting through your novel, and I'm ashamed to say that I've only made progress through it because you gave a copy of the novel to me late last summer. But you lay out a scenario in Deadstock that is very frightening in how easily the beef industry could be attacked. Was that a plausible scenario, or are you just trying to scare us?
Well, I'm trying to scare you with a plausible scenario. It actually could happen. That was what grabbed me when I first started reading about it as a reporter. And I've since learned, as I've met more and more people and talked with the FBI, for example, that, in fact, it really is a plausible scenario.
Go into the scenario. What exactly is the basic plot outline of your novel, Deadstock?
The villain in my book causes an outbreak of this livestock disease called foot and mouth disease, which is a real disease. And he takes advantage of the chaos that would create to profit from the commodities markets. Now, that side of the equation is also plausible, and a number of people I spoke to hadn't thought about that possibility, but I guarantee you there are criminals that have thought of it.
Well, that's the thing that really struck me about your novel, is that it didn't deal with just the damage to the beef industry. In other words, a terrorist wanting to force the United States to destroy the thousands and thousands of head of cattle to contain the disease, but somebody who would do it to turn a profit on the commodities markets. Now, you say that you guarantee that there are criminals out there who thought of this. How do you know that?
I know that because the FBI has documents that they seized from some caves in Afghanistan. They were Al-Qaeda caves, which listed some of the biological agents that they were interested in, and one of them was foot and mouth disease.
Really?
Yeah.
And the purpose
number
was?
It's number one on their list on the FBI's, or on Homeland Security's list right now. And the interest of groups like Al-Qaeda would be disruption of a major part of our economy. We're so used to having such a stable food supply and food production system here because of all the great advances that we've had in agriculture over the last half century that we just take it for granted. And I think people don't realize how much it would disrupt our economic system if someone threw a wrench in that.
How much would it disrupt America's agriculture industry if foot and mouth were confirmed in the United States?
Well, foot and mouth is in a really unique position. It's not such a devastating virus by itself. It doesn't kill the animals, but it is the most contagious virus, so extreme efforts are taken to try to stop it from spreading. And it can infect both cattle and hogs, and so it would go through our major livestock populations. As a result, it would not only impact those populations because we have to destroy herds to try to stop it, but all the grain that those animals would eat, depending on the time of year an outbreak happened, it could change what farmers plan to plant the following year. They could decide not to plant because the markets would be so disrupted.
Because the market, the cattle that would need the grain that they would plant wouldn't be there, so they would change their planting plans to something else.
Exactly.
Do you have an idea of the dollar impact that this would cause?
Well, that is the multi-billion-dollar question. The impact in England when they had their last outbreak in 2001 was, I believe, $16 billion plus. And for them, a lot of the impact was tourism. Here, we have a substantially larger agriculture system than they do in England.
Well, that was my next question. How does the size of our agriculture system compare to England's?
It is scales larger. We would have, actually, there is a significant survey that's being done right now by the University of California, Davis, to try to understand how quickly an outbreak would spread and how far it could reach in the U.S., and that could help us finally figure out what the impact could be. But it could be much larger than 16.
So much larger than $16 billion, which is pretty big to start with. We're talking with author Kate Iola. She's an agro-terror expert who's been consulted by the FBI. And we are discussing the safety of our food supply here on Food for Families Friday, sitting outside the Hy-Vee on West Broadway in Columbia, collecting your donations from the Central Missouri Food Bank and talking about the safety of what we eat. Our conversation with Kate Iola continues as the drive rolls on live from the Hy-Vee in Columbia next on the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle939.com.
Thinking Out Loud, The Drive with Derek Gilbert on the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle939.com.
Sitting here outside the Hy-Vee on West Broadway in Columbia underneath a brilliant blue sky, not a cloud as far as I can see. It's got me thinking about golf. And I don't even play golf. But Monday, you should. It's the third annual Officer Down Fund golf tourney at the Columbia Country Club. The fund is to raise money. The tournament is to raise money for the families of Columbia police officers injured or killed in the line of duty. If you'd like some information about how to put together a last-minute four-person scramble, four-person team to get out on the course and raise money for the men and women who serve in uniform right here in Columbia, stop by the website, theeagle939.com. That's theeagle939.com. Now, as I sit here outside the Hy-Vee, I see a lot of young men and leaders wearing a uniform of Boy Scout Troop 4 walking in. I saw a few of them walking out just a moment ago with bags of ice. They are stocking up at the Hy-Vee, no doubt for a weekend camping trip. And I suspect that not one of them is giving a thought to the safety of the food that they're taking out there on this camping trip. We're talking with Kate Iola. She's an agro-terror expert, the author of the novel Deadstock. Her website is Kate Iola, KateIola.com. Kate, you talked about the threat of foot and mouth disease. Now, that's kind of a silly-sounding disease. It doesn't have the same kind of ominous sound as, Ebola, right, hemorrhagic fever, something like that. Anthrax. Anthrax just sounds dangerous. Foot and mouth sounds kind of goofy. What is it, again, about foot and mouth that makes it such a threat to America's agriculture industry?
I tell people, don't think of it as a livestock virus. Think of it as an economic virus. The impact of an outbreak would not be that we would run out of food, because we will not run out of food again in this country. We can always import it now. Mm-hmm. But if we had an outbreak of foot and mouth disease, we could see banks closing down in small towns all over the country.
Hmm.
So that would be the kind of impact. So it's a little bit hard to get people, other than bankers, really excited about that, because it's not dramatic. Like you say, there's nothing, there haven't been any movies showing, animals or people falling to pieces or anything because of this virus.
Not until Hollywood comes calling for the rights to Deadstock, huh?
Right. I've actually spent some time trying to come up with a different name for foot and mouth disease, so it sounds a little more scary, but I haven't had any luck.
So it's all about marketing on that score. Well, how contagious is it really? I mean, compared to, say, a common cold at a daycare center?
It is much more contagious. Imagine if you had a cold and you sneezed and someone in a town 35 miles away caught your cold.
Are you kidding me?
It will travel 35 miles by air.
Really?
Yeah. They had this, unfortunately, proven in Europe when they had some earlier outbreaks, and they had islands which became infected because of breezes coming over from mainland areas where they had outbreaks.
And plans to take foot and mouth disease and infect herds in the United States was found in caves in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
How is the FBI, how is the Department of Homeland Security trying to guard against that?
Well, that's the worst part about it. You can't prevent it. You can only raise awareness so that when it does eventually come here, which it will, either by accident or on purpose, when it arrives, people respond quickly and appropriately so that we can get it shut down quickly.
Once we get past the top of the hour here, we've got a look at news, world and national news coming up. Also, Aaron Fox in the Eagle 93.9 newsroom straight ahead. Want to talk about how easy it would be for somebody to cause something like this. But how much time do you put into researching your novel Deadstock and looking into foot and mouth disease?
I spent altogether about 5 years on the book. Part of that was just learning how to write fiction, but I read everything that I could find. I talked to people. I got to go to Plum Island, which is the big research center.
And oh, yeah.
Yeah, you have to be invited to go. And even though I had written this book and I did bad things to Plum Island in the book, they still invited me to come out, and I let them look over the manuscript before it came out so they could see if there was anything they wanted me to change. And
now, Plum Island, that's a biosafety level 4 laboratory, isn't it? BSL 4?
Well, it's BSL 3 ag, which is the top level for the ag labs for right now, but they wanted to have a BSL 4 lab there, and the local residents refused. So that happened before they made the decision to move the facility to the mainland, this MBAF.
The MBAF, which Columbia, the University of Missouri, is trying to get. So the residents of Plum Island, where they've had this facility since World War II, didn't want a BSL 4 facility, and yet here in Columbia, according to the most recent survey done by the Chamber of Commerce, the majority of Columbians are all for it.
Yeah.
I think it's because most people in Columbia don't really understand what it is. We're talking with Kate Iola. Hopefully we can explain this in more detail over the next hour. She is the author of a novel, Deadstock, and an expert in agricultural issues, specifically agricultural terror. And we thought that the discussion today would tie in nicely with Food for Families Friday. Not we're trying to make you afraid of food, just more aware of the chain between farm and your fork. I'm Derek Gilbert. This is Off Road Friday. We're live at the Hy-Vee on West Broadway in Columbia. Here until 7 o'clock. Stop by, donate to the Central Missouri Food Bank with the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle 939.com.
Stimulating talk, no static. The Drive with Derek Gilbert on the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle939.com.
Coming up Monday on The Drive, we're going to talk to Nanette Ward. She's with the Columbia Human Rights Commission. They have another event, a community circle, coming up Tuesday, and we'll find out from her Monday afternoon what that is about. And then Monday, another opportunity for Justin to really be in his element. Justin, we've got Sonny Utterback and Tom Hughes coming into the studio to talk about the NRA Bianchi Cup Pistol Championships, which will be held here in Columbia. So looking forward to that, and I'm sure Justin will be looking for some advice, perhaps some tips. That is Monday afternoon on The Drive between 5 and 7 on the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle939.com. I'm Derek Gilbert, sitting outside the Hy-Vee on West Broadway in Columbia. It is a gorgeous afternoon. When we were here in October, it was cold, and we were outside under the tent. Here, we actually chose to sit outside because it is a gorgeous day, bright blue skies, and we're here for a wonderful cause. That is the Central Missouri Food Bank. We're collecting your food donations, non-perishable items, please, or your cash donation. Why? Because 80,000 people a month depend on the Central Missouri Food Bank to keep hunger away. They provide food to hunger relief agencies in 33 counties across Central Missouri, everything from Lake of the Ozarks to the Iowa border, and we would like your donation this afternoon. I'll be here until 7 o'clock tonight. If you can't make it to the Hy-Vee on West Broadway in Columbia, you can always donate to the Central Missouri Food Bank at their website. That's Central Mo Food Bank, all one word, centralmofoodbank.org, and help do something for somebody in need right here in mid-Missouri. It's something concrete you can do. And amazingly, they can take your dollar. If you choose to donate cash or a check, your $1 donation translates into 20 meals for people in need here in Missouri. So come on by this afternoon or stop by their website, centralmofoodbank.org. We're at the Hy-Vee on West Broadway in Columbia until 7 o'clock tonight. Joining us by telephone now, as we continue our discussion on Off-Road Friday, we tackle some of the topics you just don't hear about in the major media. Our guest is Kate Iola. She's an agricultural terror expert, the author of a frightening novel, Deadstock. Frightening because it is so plausible. Now, Kate, before the news break at the top of the hour, we were talking about foot and mouth disease, the fact that the FBI has found documentation in caves in Afghanistan that Al-Qaeda is thinking about trying to infect herds in the United States with foot and mouth disease. How easy would it be, based on your research, for them to do that?
Well, unfortunately, it's probably one of the easiest diseases to spread. I really laugh when I hear people having panic fits about,
suitcase nukes?
Or things like, even like anthrax or smallpox, which really would take quite a bit of preparation and work to generate enough to cause a big outbreak. With foot and mouth disease, you really would just have to get a handful of mud from one of the many infected parts of the world and bring it back home here and go spread it on the nose of some animal or put it in a sprayer and spray it on them. And this, I'm not revealing any state secrets here. This is absolute basic biology.
So
which,
this is pretty low tech.
Oh, yeah. It spreads the way the animals spread it. They breathe it out. It comes out in, every fluid that comes out of the animal's body. And that's all that needs to be put in contact with another animal. So,
foot and mouth, is it a virus or is it a bacteria?
It is a virus.
How long does it survive outside an animal?
It's a fairly tough virus. It can be inactivated by sunlight, so good sunny days would be nice if there's an outbreak. But it can survive for a month in mud. It survives very well frozen. So if we had an outbreak in the winter, we really wouldn't be able to clean things up properly until spring thaw.
And when you say clean things up properly, what do you mean?
Decontaminating. Going through an area, which is what they had to do in England, for example, to try to get rid of the virus from areas that had been infected. They had to entirely clean out barns, manure pits, soil. They would scrape away the top layer of soil from feedlots because the virus would be throughout, would be all mixed in with the soil. And so before they could bring animals back to an area, they'd have to completely sanitize a farm.
And what are the animals? What happens to the animals on an infected farm?
Well, if you don't want to have the virus in your country, you have to destroy the animals anywhere that there is an infection. There aren't very good vaccines, and it is possible to use vaccines as part of your strategy for stopping an outbreak, but since the vaccines aren't very good, you still have to destroy those animals eventually.
For how wide a radius around the infected areas?
There are some specific plans for the range, and I'm not sure if they're completely consistent state to state. That's something I've got to check up on, but it's an order of miles. So if my farm is infected, everything within, say, 3 miles of me or 2 miles would have to be depopulated, as they say.
And that would involve hogs, cattle?
Yeah, all of the vulnerable animals, which would be hogs, cattle, goats, sheep, alpaca.
Huh.
Think camels, if you happen to have any camels. But
if I'm not mistaken, I think we've got some alpaca here in mid-Missouri.
I'm sure you do. There's a very large alpaca farm near me. And I think about foot and mouth disease every time I drive by.
And we're talking to Kate Iola. She's an agri-terror expert and the author of the novel Deadstock on the Eagle 93.9. So basically, you have to kill everything that would be a potential carrier of the disease within a certain radius of an infected farm. And then you basically have to sterilize the area by scraping down the dirt and scrubbing every surface that those animals would have come in contact with within that same range, that same area?
I think so. I hadn't thought it through to that extent. I know the barns that the animals are in, but as far as what they do with pasture, I don't know about that.
Now, you mentioned in the last half hour that the virus can be aerosolized. It spreads through the air, and it's been known to spread up to 35 miles from an infected area. So everything downwind for some miles could potentially be infected. So would I be right in assuming that how long has it been since there's been a confirmed outbreak of foot and mouth disease in the United States?
It's been since
1929.
Yeah.
So almost 80 years. If we were to have a confirmed case here, how quickly and how aggressively would USDA address the problem?
Oh, very aggressively. The impact, as soon as there is a confirmed outbreak, and the testing for it would be done very quickly also, as soon as there is a confirmed case, for one thing, exports of beef, pork, and dairy products stop immediately.
So our foreign customers of American beef and pork would be gone, stopped.
They would switch to other sources, which, depending on how quickly and effectively we stopped the outbreak, if we didn't do it quick enough, we could lose customers permanently. That's also one of the major concerns. Right now, we're in a really unique position. We are the largest agricultural country that is foot and mouth disease free and vaccine free. And that gives us a special status that allows us to sell to everybody in the world.
And maybe charge a little bit extra. We're talking with Kate Iola. She's an expert in these matters, and we're discussing the safety of our food supplies. We sit outside the Hy-Vee on West Broadway for Food for Families Friday as we're collecting your donations for the Central Missouri Food Bank. We'd like to see you here between now and 7 o'clock. Stop by. It's a gorgeous night. And if you're not here to grocery shop, it's a quick in and out. We're sitting right outside the entrance. The collection point is right inside the left-hand entrance of the Hy-Vee on West Broadway in Columbia. And your donation makes a big difference to our neighbors here in Central Missouri. We'll continue our discussion on Off-Road Friday with Kate Iola as the drive continues next on the Eagle 93.9 at Eagle939.com.
This is The Drive with Derek Gilbert on the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle939.com.
And we are off to a wonderful start for the weekend here. I just talked with Jessica Spangle-Auer, the Director of Development for the Central Missouri Food Bank out here at the Hy-Vee on West Broadway in Columbia. She said that so far this month we've raised just about three-quarters of a truckload. We're talking about 15 tons worth of food for people who are hungry here in Central Missouri. The Central Missouri Food Bank is looking for your donations. It's a Food for Families Friday at the Hy-Vee on West Broadway. We'll be here until 7 o'clock tonight. KOMU-TV Channel 8 is also out here this afternoon, and they got cameras here, so maybe you can come out and get on the TV tonight, huh? Can't make any promises, but Matt Garrett from Channel 8 is here, and maybe that will happen for you as well. But the main thing is that while you're here, we will take your donations of non-perishable food items and also cash donations. Your $10 donation buys 200 meals. You heard me right. $10, 200 meals for people in need here in Mid-Missouri. So see us this afternoon at the Hy-Vee on West Broadway in Columbia before 7 o'clock and make that happen. Our guest this afternoon is Kate Iola. She's an author and agro-terror expert. Her novel Deadstock paints a very frightening picture of how the U.S. economy could be thrown into what's a good word? Paroxysm of despair? How's that? Cataclysmic proportions? With a very simple method, very simply, by infecting a feedlot with foot and mouth disease. We talked about that to I think, for a good while. I'm kind of curious, though, about other threats to American food supply. Again, you were at a symposium held by the FBI last fall. What other areas of America's food supply are they looking at?
One of the big areas is not on the livestock or grain production end, but on the other end of the pipeline, where food is being packaged and then sent out to the general public.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of biological agents, like viruses or bacteria, would get killed during the packaging and processing of food. So if you were someone who had a grudge against your employer, or if you were some crabby terrorist and you wanted to get something into the American food supply, you wouldn't do that by inserting something poisonous, say, in the cattle or the grain. You'd put it into processed food down at the other end just before it gets shipped out. Otherwise, the processing might destroy what you put in there.
Well, and this, in a sense, this relates to the stories that we've heard over the last couple of months now about the melamine in the pet food. Not exactly the same scenario, but it kind of demonstrates how things can get into processed food items without us really knowing about it. And you know, there was a news item that came out that we just talked about yesterday on the Eagle 93.9, which was that a group of disgruntled Muslims from Somalia who were working at the meatpacking plant in Nebraska demanded certain rights. You know, they wanted basically extra time out for their prayers during the day, and Swift basically told them to, take a hike. But you look at that story, and then you put that together with the scenario that you put out there, and it's conceivable that something like that might happen at a food processing plant at some point. What safeguards are in place? What safeguards are in place to keep that from happening?
Well, those are tough things to do. There's not a whole lot you can do to prevent having unhappy people working in your facility.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you do have, good company morale and good screening of your employees. So a lot of it really relies on having good inspection service. And as we said at the beginning of the program, inspection is a tough process. On imported goods, there's only, like you said, only 1-2% of everything imported gets inspected. And at food processing and packaging plants, I believe the percentage is higher than that, but still it's a very big challenge because they're also not able to screen for every possible thing that someone could doctor a product with.
Well, as in the case of the pet foods, the substance that caused the deaths of over 42,000 cats and dogs is melamine, which on the basic tests just showed up as extra protein.
Yeah.
Is it a problem with manpower or funding for the FDA or the USDA? Who's responsible for checking these sorts of things at food processing plants?
I believe it is a combination of the USDA and the FDA. It definitely is supported by our tax dollars. So that's where we as citizens would have to make the call. If we want more inspection, we could have it, but we've got to be willing to pay the taxes to support that.
Yeah.
It's a tough call.
How much is the safety of your food worth? We're talking with Kate Iola on the Eagle 93.9, agro-terror expert and author of the novel Deadstock. When you were at the symposium last fall, the FBI symposium on agricultural terror, what seemed to be the area that most concerned the Department of Homeland Security?
Communication. Yes, there was a lot of discussion about what is going to happen when there is a crisis. Who is going to know who they're supposed to be talking to and who's in charge? There were special initiatives that were presented at the symposium that dealt specifically with how to figure out who's in charge. I tell you, I left the symposium even more concerned about how we would deal with a crisis like a foot and mouth outbreak, which is a major clock that would be ticking once it starts.
Right, because you'd potentially have USDA involved in that, FBI, if it was treating it as a crime. You could also have the Centers for Disease Control involved in that or something.
Well,
Department of Homeland Security trying to coordinate it all, I guess. Did they settle this issue? Is there still something that needs to be worked out?
It's something that still needs to be worked out on a county-by-county basis as far as awareness. With foot and mouth disease, you're also going to have significant quarantines in place immediately. So you'll have highway patrol shutting down roads. You'll have hospitals that can't run their ambulances everywhere they may want to. You have, teams from the county that need to be digging burial pits. And who's going to pay for that? And who's going to be in charge of telling them where to dig them? And it's going to be rather chaotic.
How much pressure would there be from farm bureaus to kind of keep a lid on things?
As far as...
Well,
keeping
it quiet, or would there be any pressure? I'm certainly not trying to cast any aspersions on the men and women who farm for a living. I come from a long line of farmers on my mother's side, and
a lot of this country does.
You go back a few generations, and most of us were farmers. Now it's like 2% of us, which is why these issues are so difficult for a lot of us to grasp. You know, for us, the idea of food safety is not getting mugged at the Hy-Vee parking lot. And since that's not really something most of us here in Columbia have to worry about, we don't even think about it. We just go in, we come out, our food is safe, we don't even give it a thought. But the people who are closer to it, such as you up in Iowa and relatives of mine who are still living in agricultural communities are a lot closer to it, understand this a lot better than I do. Would there be pressure from people who are farming to try to keep a lid on things? Because they would be facing the loss of, and I guess there's another expense there, too. If you have to destroy a herd because of an outbreak, who pays for the cattle lost?
Some of the cattle would be paid for by the USDA. If the cattle were destroyed on a farm to stop the outbreak from spreading from there. But if you're on a farm that's just stuck within the quarantine zone and you're... cattle aren't infected, but you can't get feed for them anymore, or your employees can't come on the farm because of the quarantine, and you have no one to take care of your animals.
Oh.
You may have to destroy them anyway. You can't leave 500 dairy cattle unmilked.
No.
For, a week, 3 weeks. And so those animals are not going to be paid for. So there is tremendous risk for the individual producers. That there would be many farms that go bankrupt.
And again, so, people in a zone like that, or people who live in agriculture communities, people who farm for a living, understand that risk, I think, or at least they have a better understanding of the threat than those of us who are living in urban areas, who were born and raised in urban areas, who, again, the extent of knowledge I have of dairy cow is, that it comes in a gallon jug or a half gallon jug. And I like the thick stuff in my coffee in the morning. We're talking with Kate Iola. This is Off-Road Friday on the Eagle 93.9. And we're discussing the safety of our food as we sit here at the Hy-Vee on West Broadway in Columbia collecting food for the Central Missouri Food Bank. It's Food for Families Friday. We'll be here until 7 o'clock. And, of course, we would love to see you out here. We've collected over 30,000 pounds of food this month for the Central Missouri Food Bank. We'd like to add to that, of course, because there are some 80,000 people this month alone who depend on the Central Missouri Food Bank to keep from going hungry. So stop out here, Hy-Vee on West Broadway, before 7 o'clock tonight, or stop by the Central Missouri Food Bank's website, which is centralmofoodbank.org. I'm Derek Gilbert. Our conversation with Kate Iola continues in just a few minutes on the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle 939.com.
Driving Columbia to think. This is The Drive with Derek Gilbert on the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle 939.com.
The number one topic on the Eagle 93.9 today, definitely immigration reform. And again, I put the word reform in quoting marks. Michael Savage and Neil Bortz will take up the topic after 7 o'clock tonight on the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle939.com. I'm Derek Gilbert, sitting outside the Hy-V on West Broadway in Columbia. Just saw Jessica Spangelauer, the Central Missouri Food Bank's Director of Development, rolling another a shopping cart full of donations for the food bank out to a waiting van. They're collecting and going to take it off to the food bank here. There's still time for you to stop by with your donation, either a cash donation or donation of non-perishable food items. It's for the Central Missouri Food Bank, one of five food banks in the country that supplies food for free to hunger agencies, and they serve 80,000 people a month in 33 counties here in Missouri. So if you'd like to do something for our neighbors right here in our backyard, make sure you come out to the Hy-Vee this afternoon before 7 o'clock. If you can't make it by 7, stop by their website, centralmofoodbank.org. And as we collect food for the Central Missouri Food Bank, we're talking about the safety of our food supply in the American agriculture industry with the agro-terror expert and author Kate Iola. She's the author of a novel, Dead Stock. You can find out more at her website, Kate Iola, KateIola.com. Kate, I want to talk more about the National Bio and Agro Defense Facility. This is something that you made me aware of last year, and Columbia is in the running for this highly secure half-billion-dollar proposed center that the Department of Homeland Security wants to build. The proposed site is out on New Haven Road, just next door to practically to New Haven Elementary School. What is NBAF? Why does the Department of Homeland Security want to move it from Plum Island to the heartland, possibly?
Well, that is a very good question, Derek. And I don't believe that they have a good answer for that myself. The NBAF is, as you mentioned, it's the replacement for Plum Island, the place that I visited this last year.
Mm-hmm.
Plum Island is a very isolated location for a research facility, which is all they have there. There is nothing else on Plum Island except for the research lab, which mainly, almost exclusively, works on foot and mouth disease.
Really?
Yeah. There are a few other projects that they do in the building. They do also the testing, all of the foot and mouth disease tests that are run throughout the year from anyone who suspects they have an animal who might have a case. Those are also all shipped to Plum Island. And so that is part of the package that is being proposed to move to this replacement facility called the NBAF.
Now, why is this facility on Plum Island now? Where is Plum Island?
Plum Island is off the tip of Long Island, off of New York State.
Mm-hmm.
So it's south of Connecticut and east of New York State. It's only a few miles off of one of those land masses, a few miles off of Long Island, but it's also in a very livestock-sparse area. You don't have a whole lot of rodeo activity in New York City.
Yeah, not many cows or pigs there. Not anymore, anyway.
Yeah, so you don't have livestock trailers going by mm-hmm. with high frequency or, you know, ever going through Long Island. So in that sense, it's a very good layer of biological isolation around the center. Plus, you have physical isolation because you have at least a couple miles of water all around this facility. And then you also have it isolated from traffic because the only people who are allowed on the island are the ones that are authorized to go into the laboratory.
Okay, so there's nobody who can get close to it unless they're supposed to be there.
Right.
Okay.
Even to get on the island, you go on a ferry that's owned by the island and run by Homeland Security. They've got armed guards. You have to check in, show them your ID. They check you off. You sit on the ferry with them, and they take you to the island, and they check you off on another list, and then they put you on a bus. Everybody gets on this bus and is carted up to the laboratory. And people who work there do that every day.
And the people, when they leave the island, what kind of they have to go through any kind of a decontamination procedure?
Oh, yeah. Because the things they work with there are not dangerous to humans, but they're dangerous, extremely dangerous to livestock. That's why they have them on an isolated island. So when you go to the island, I took my mother there.
A Mother's Day trip to Plum Island?
Actually, it was her birthday. But, I don't know, she's used to me. So, it was her 70th birthday, and I just thought it would be special.
My mom turned 70 a few weeks ago, too, and we hired an Elvis impersonator.
Okay, so?
Took her to a German restaurant. I guess Plum Island was just, you know, we couldn't get on the package tour.
Yeah, well, you know. It was kind of important to me, so I thought she'd like it. So anyway, we had to go shower in and put on sort of surgical scrubs that they provide and shoes. And then you have your, you know, you have your tour, or, you know, we were really an oddity there because they don't really get many people coming to visit to look around.
No, so. No. I mean, Plum Island really, if
it's
people
not
heard,
a tourist destination.
No, if
I know.
Have heard of it at all, it's from the movie Silence of the Lambs. That's where they were going to send Hannibal Lecter, you know, for his,
exactly.
If he cooperated, he will let you out of jail, but you get to go to Plum Island.
Yeah.
So that's the only thing I knew about Plum Island before we started talking.
Yeah, and they really do have sharpshooters there to get rid of deer on the island.
Really?
I think they mentioned that in the movie, too. Yeah. Yeah,
huh,
they can't risk the deer, because deer also carry cytomegalovirus.
Oh, okay. All right.
They can't risk deer getting it from a leak and then carrying it to the mainland, because the deer will swim all the way to the mainland.
3 miles.
Yeah.
Interesting. Kate Iola is our guest on the Eagle 93.9 as we sit outside the Hy-Vee here for the Central Missouri Food Bank. We're talking about food safety and security and the National Bio and Agro Defense Facility. So this is the place, the sharpshooters around the island, 3 miles off the mainland where you've got to wear scrubs, you've got to be decontaminated when you leave, no one gets close to it. And this is the facility that the University of Missouri would like to put on New Haven Road, close to New Haven Elementary. Would they be studying just foot and mouth here, or are there other diseases that Department of Homeland Security would like to study at this NBAF?
Well, the NBAF is actually another level beyond Plum Island.
So and this is a level of security higher?
Yes.
So
yes. Plum Island is just for animal diseases.
Okay.
So it's called BSL, Biological Safety Level 3 mm-hmm. Ag. And what they want to have with the NBAF is that same package plus BSL-4, which is for diseases that can infect humans.
Okay.
So diseases that infect animals and humans.
Now, BSL-4,
they don't do that at Plum Island.
BSL-4 is the highest level, isn't it?
Yes.
That's the kind where guys have to wear, like, moon suits to go in?
Yes.
Okay.
That's the spacesuit level, because you need the spacesuits to protect the human.
Right.
So when my mother and I were in Plum Island, we were all the way down in the animal facility. And we actually got to see animals that had foot and mouth disease. It was pretty disturbing. But we only had to promise not to go near any farms when we came out and shower out extremely well. Believe me, we did. But we weren't at risk of us getting sick with anything, so we didn't have to wear the moon suits.
Right. But this BSL-4 facility that DHS wants to build, and again, Columbia is one of 17 applicants for this particular facility, would have that security plus BSL-4. What kind of diseases are studied in a BSL-4 laboratory?
BSL-4 would be the kind of laboratory where something like Ebola could be studied, because that can infect...
Uh-huh.
I don't know that they need to work on Ebola there, but that's something that could infect humans or monkeys,
mm-hmm.
say. And so that's something you would not study in the ag, the level 3, but you'd study that in the level 4. So all of the FMD work is in the level 3, and right now it's all done on Plum Island. You can't, it is illegal to work on it anywhere else in the country because you don't have that physical and biological isolation.
Right.
But,
and because, again, as you pointed out, it's very easy to take foot and mouth disease and transport it into, and in fact, a working farm, it would seem to me that that's a good thing. If you had it here in the heartland, whether it's Missouri, Iowa, Nebraska, Kansas, wherever, Illinois, it wouldn't take a whole, It wouldn't take a real serious breach of security for foot and mouth or something to get out of the laboratory. We're talking with Kate Ayala. We'll continue talking about this and what the issues are that we in Colombia need to consider as we move forward with this application process for the National Bio and Agro Defense Facility. Kate Ayala is our guest. I'm Derek Gilbert, live at the Hy-Vee on West Broadway in Colombia, Off-Road Friday on the Drive. Our conversation with Kate Ayala continues next on the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle939.com.
You're hearing The Drive with Derek Gilbert on the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle939.com.
And that rattle you hear in the background is the sound of grocery carts going in and out of the Hy-Vee on West Broadway in Columbia. I'm sitting right outside the left-hand entrance as you look at it. We're here for the Central Missouri Food Bank collecting on Food for Families Friday. The Central Missouri Food Bank supplying food to 80,000 people across Missouri every month at no charge to them. So your donation is going straight to people who need it and is not being... Not being taken up with, say, administrative costs. We'll be here until 7 o'clock tonight, but if you can't make it today, there'll be another opportunity next Friday afternoon, another Food for Families Friday. Details at the website, theeagle939.com. Our last segment was author Kate Ayala. She's an agro-terror expert, the author of the novel Deadstock. And, Kate, we've been talking about the National Bio and Agro Defense Facility's proposed facility, a bioweapons lab, that could wind up here in Colombia as early as the year 2013, if I understand the timeline. I don't want to be an alarmist, but I want to be informed as to what this is all about. I mean, we keep hearing about the economic impact. You know, it's a $500 million construction project. It would employ a couple hundred scientists, high-quality, good-paying jobs here in mid-Missouri. What are your concerns about this NBAF?
Oh, where do I begin? I would first say that I really would have some reservations about the leadership and the competence of any group that would propose to bring the National Foot and Mouth Disease Laboratory to the middle of the American agricultural economy. Without even thinking further about the BSL-4 side of the facility, The fact that they're proposing to bring the Plum Island lab, basically, is so irrational. I really would have some concerns about who's in charge there.
Well, again, as you put it, if it's like having a virus, the foot and mouth virus, it's like having a common cold that could be spread by a sneeze for a radius of 35 miles.
Yeah.
That is enough to make me stop and think twice. And then, of course, having a BSL-4 facility working on diseases that are communicable to humans within a few hundred yards of an elementary school. And, of course, the people who live in the subdivisions around the proposed site aren't real happy about this either. But
I certainly wouldn't have a whole lot of confidence in the people in charge there.
Just because of the proposal to move a foot-and-mouth laboratory to the heart of America's...
Look at the proposal. There is no risk analysis. They are looking at they're doing an environmental risk environmental assessment. I can't remember the term they're using. They're basically looking at whether it will pollute the area, but they're not looking at what the potential impact would be if there was an outbreak caused by either a leak, which is what happened on Plum Island in 1978. That was when they stopped having cattle outside because they had a leak that got out of the cattle there. So if there was a leak or if some unhappy employee stormed out without showering or if an animal activist got a job there on purpose so they could walk out someday with dirty hands.
Well, you've got that possibility and the fact that accidents do sometimes happen even at BSL-4 laboratories. There was a case a year ago at the Texas A&M facility, and Texas A&M is one of the other competitors for this, one of the other applicants for this NBAF facility. Researcher was infected with the Brucella virus. There have been other cases, but again, we've been told that this is a state-of-the-art facility. Things like this just won't happen, but you're saying that they just have not analyzed or do not found yet that they've done a risk analysis?
They haven't.
Oh,
they haven't. Nobody has. And also, if you look at the way these projects this project, the MBAS, is being presented, both in Columbia and in the other 16 communities where it's being proposed. There's a lot of talk about the economic impact for the local community, the benefit locally.
Where
but they're not considering the potential risk nationally.
Where can people go to find out more information on MBAF and what it is and to weigh the risk versus the benefit?
There isn't a place. That's the problem. That is what I have been pushing people to try to do. There has not been any national study done. That is one thing that the University of California, Davis is starting to do now. But nobody has done a nationwide impact study of a foot and mouth outbreak in general, and definitely none of these MBAF proposed communities has done a study to look at what would happen if they had a leak and it triggered a national outbreak. For example, I haven't seen any discussion of potential liability. If Missouri is the one that has a leak or an unhappy employee and triggers an outbreak, are the surrounding states then going to go after
the state of Missouri for it? Yeah. Very quickly, because we're down to our last couple of minutes here, what would have happened if the leak in 1978 at Plum Island had happened here in mid-Missouri?
I think there'd be a whole lot smaller economy in Missouri right now and in the surrounding areas.
Kate, once again, what's your website for people to check out your novel, Deadstock?
KateIola.com.
KateIola.com. Kate, it's always an education when you're on with us. Thanks again for being with us this afternoon on the Eagle 93.9.
Thank you, Derek.
Kate Iola, agri-terror expert, the author of the novel Deadstock, highly recommended. Not only is it a frightening scenario, but it's a darn good story. Michael Savage and the Savage Nation takes over next. I'm going to go enjoy a wonderful weekend. I hope you do the same. See you back here again on Monday afternoon. Keep it on the Eagle 93.9 all weekend long. Michael Savage next on the Eagle 93.9 and the Eagle 939.com.
Over 6,000 years ago, the citizens of Mesopotamia encountered them.
Down through time, tens of thousands of people on every continent of the world have etched their likeness on the walls of caves, chiseled statues of them from solid stone, and prayed prayers to their highest gods to be delivered from them.
But prophecy says they will return. And at a time when Babylon, modern Iraq, and Iran is invaded and destroyed. This spring, exclusively from RaidersNewsUpdate.com, we'll tell you what you need to know about them. In the book-length ebook, Stargates, Ancient Rituals, and Those Invited Through the Portal.
In the 14th century, the Black Death killed nearly one-third the population of Europe. In 1918, the Spanish flu killed as many as 100 million people. The next great plague may already be spreading. Inspired by today's headlines, it's the Armageddon Strain, the explosive new thriller from Sharon K. Gilbert. At a laboratory somewhere in the desert southwest, a secretive group has created a deadly virus for a single purpose, to eliminate 90% of human life. Standing in their way is Dr. Maggie Taylor, a woman broken by grief and alcohol, who must somehow find the strength to unravel the mystery of her father's death in time to stop the virus from being released. Infuse magazine says Sharon Gilbert has a talent for making you feel good, scared, on the edge of your seat, and dying for more. And Christian Fiction Review says Sharon Gilbert does a very nice job of building suspense and horror step by step. The Armageddon Strain from Sharon K. Gilbert, the newest release in the Myth Arc, the ultimate battle for mankind. Available now online and at bookstores everywhere.